Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Everybody, this is Jeff Shannon with Inside Lacrosse. We're here for our final 2012 high school, I'm calling it high school mega podcast. We are finished up with the season. In fact, IL has already moved on to the recruiting calendar already. You can find a lot of that information on InsideLacrosse.com as we go through the season. But we are here to take one last look at the Under Armour Inside Lacrosse 2012 high school top 25 power rankings. This was a fantastic year, and fortunately I had a lot of help from my guys, Casey and from Ty, Casey Vock and Ty Sanders, who were both, who have been vital parts of what we've done in the high school world in the past, and we're all together in one location this year, so it was a lot of good time. So, without further ado, and you might have seen this on the site last week, but I just kind of want to reiterate our top 25 again. Garden City, New York, Class B state champions, is our number one team for the 2012 high school season. Finished the season 22-0. A lot of big wins on their resume, including a big win over Conestoga. Made a nice trip down to Maryland at one point in the year, and really just ruled the roost when it came to the Class B area all the way to a state title. For those guys, a lot of Division I talent on that team. You'll see several of those guys, including Dan Marino, Devin Dwyer, Patrick Berkery in the Under Armour All-American game that's coming up. Number two, Calvert Hall, our preseason number one, finished in the number two spot, went 16-2 and won the MIAA champion. I would say arguably that team at the end of the season was one of the scariest ones I'd seen. Kind of lived up to the hype that we had thrown at them earlier in the year, and really dominated in that championship match over Loyola Blakefield in the title game, and really kind of lived up to all the potential that everyone kind of saw in them. Again, we'll see a lot of those kids in the Under Armour game coming up July 1st, I believe, is the game date for that, or June 30th, whatever that Saturday is, is coming up soon. Of course, you'll find all that, the game coverage of that on InsideLacrosse.com as well. Number three, Perennial Power, West Islip, does it again. Goes 21-1 and wins New York Class A champion. Just a fantastic machine that Scott Craig has up there in New York, producing teams, and that's the key word for these programs. I mean, they've had a lot of fantastic Division I talent in the past, and they still do, but it's never really about the talent; it's about how they're able to play together and make a run. For Gonzaga, my favorite story of the season, goes 20-1 out of D.C. Beats all comers. The only loss they had was against the MIAA team, McDonnell. Wins the WCAC champion, takes out local rivals Georgetown Prep and Landon on the way to their 20-1 season. And again, a lot of good players on that team. Connor Reed will be in the Under Armour game. He is headed to Hopkins, Washington Post Player of the Year. Just a tremendous run for them. And then number five, St. Anthony's, goes 16-3, wins the Catholic New York title. After losing twice to Chaminade in the regular season, they finally get the revenge in the championship game. Always sort of seems to play out that way. So that's our top five. We'll go through the rest in a little bit. But, guys, I want to get your thoughts on the top five. I know, Casey, you were up at New York for the championship games. What was your thoughts about Garden City and some of these teams coming in this top five? And, Ty, I know you're going to want to talk about Garden City as well, too, because you saw a lot of them. But let's start with Casey. Casey, we'll...
Well, all three of the New York State champions are incredibly tough teams, scary teams, actually, just because of how deep they are and just the fact that they seem to be playing their best at the end of the season. All of the different classes in New York State have between 80 and over 100 teams in them, so I think it's something maybe many people don't realize, just how hard it is to get through all those teams and get to the very end of the season, and these guys are representative of just how good lacrosse is at any given point in time in New York State, and it just happens to be Long Island's year, and rightfully so, because those were three of the best teams I saw on the high school scene. Particularly West Islip, I thought, was maybe even a little underrated at parts toward the end of the season. I think they're almost as good as some of the West Islip teams we've seen in the past 4 or 5 years that created a, you know, the dynasty that we know of now at West Islip. You just look all over the field, and they've got role players, and they've got skilled players. And to me, that was the team that I left sort of scared, thinking, my gosh, look at how good that program is. They handled Ithaca, a team that I thought was impressive both in this season and in the past season, and they brought the same brought a lot of the same characters to the field this year. And West Islip weathered an early push by them and then slowly but surely asserted themselves and proved to be a better team by a good margin, I think. Just athletic, well coached, and just a machine to watch on the field. And obviously the same could be said for Garden City. Clearly they've earned their title as the number one team in the country, and you look all over the field and you've got Division I potential players. I think that the interesting story was that they didn't play Jamesville DeWitt, a team that I know that they were hungry to beat. But this has been a long time coming for Garden City, and it was really, I guess, cool to see a team that you know was so close in the last couple of seasons bring it all together, have just an absolutely incredible run through arguably the hardest schedule in the country, and then at the end of the season, you know, celebrate on the field as friends and family after beating a very good Aroundcook team that was impressive and knocking off Jamesville DeWitt. And I think a lot of people don't realize that Aroundcook team was a lot like Garden City in that the last two seasons, their season was ended by Jamesville DeWitt. So it was kind of a unique turn of events to see things happen like that. And that game was exciting because for a while it actually felt like it was going to go a way that people didn't think it was going to go. Aroundcook proved to be pretty tough, very athletic, well coached, full of a bunch of players that'll make it to the next level. Specifically guys like Kyle Doctor and Gunnar Miller, two All-Americans, who I think turned heads that weekend in front of a lot of coaches who had never seen them. So that was another great experience. This is the second year in a row for me to be able to cover the New York State Championships, and I enjoy it so much just because it's where I'm from, and I'll get to that in a second. But it's also, like I said, so many different teams. It's so hard to get to that point and just get out of your own section. Some sections are tougher than others. Obviously, you look at Section 8 being Nassau County, and you look at Section 11 being Suffolk County, and Section 3 being the Syracuse area. Those are really, really, really tough sections to get out of. So the fun part of being able to cover the games leading up to the championship is that you see a lot of teams that could possibly make noise at the state level if they actually made it through. And that's the same for Long Island. We know that every year there's teams that don't make it off the island who are just powerhouses. So to be watching the best of the best off the island, you know you're looking at teams who are just absolutely battle-tested, skilled, and teams that know how to win. That being the case, we look at the third game, the Class C Championship, featuring my favorite player that I saw during the day, and that's Tim Rotans. I think that kid is on his way to being a superstar. I think that he's the most Division I ready of the Long Island attackman in the elite group, and certainly comes back next year as a marked man on Long Island, is probably the best player on Long Island from the attack position. But he plays all over the field. He played midfield for them. After Brosco went down in the first 13 seconds of the game with a concussion, you could see Tim put the team on his back, and he was making plays all over the field, led the game with 6 ground balls, finished with 5 goals, 2 assists, and just made it look like he was determined to put that team into the championship spotlight and made his father proud in the process. So they had to beat a tough Pan Yan team that largely relies on a couple of sophomores for scoring, and their sophomore goalie, Brandon Misiszewski, and I'm probably saying that wrong, so we just call him Mace in the press box. But they also had an All-American in Dylan Yass, who's headed to St. Leo's, and another solid attackman in Mace's brother, Ryan, who's going to be a senior next year. So this was a team that also had a bunch of seniors that were more like role-playing type guys, like Jordan Owen, Dan Guerrera, a defender who also faced off for him. So they came down out of Pan Yan, out of the Rochester and Finger Lakes region, a little bit of an unknown quantity. I'm a little more familiar with them because I've talked to their coach, Brian Hobart, a bunch in the last couple of years, Talked to Brett Pointer about them. And even Tom Rotan said that a team like that comes out of the woods, essentially, in upstate New York, and they're like a mystery. So the Schroem, Wade, and River handled themselves with class. And after their captain and top midfielder and faceoff guy goes down, Tim rallies the troops, and they really respond, I think, well as a team and put on a tremendous show and winning by a final score of 10-6. They really held the Penn Yan Shooters in check and just really impressed me. I mean, overall, you can't say enough about the talent that comes off of Long Island, but not only the talent, just the teams in general, like Jeff was just saying about West Islip, they are just polished and put on a show every time you get to see them play. So for me, it was a privilege to get to see these guys. It was almost like the best of both worlds for me to be in New York the last couple of years, move down here in November, get my healthy dose of MIAA action and get to see it with, you know, my own eyes in person, and then also go up to the New York State Championship. So for me, it was really rewarding, actually, for somebody who loves what I do so much, to get to see all that lacrosse. So just a really exciting spring, and that was definitely one of my highlights, was being at the championships.
Definitely. Ty, I know you followed Garden City for a long time now. What are your thoughts about their run to the number one rankings for 2012, especially with some of the talent they have on that team? What are some observations you took away from that group this season?
Well, first off, I think they're one of the more impressive teams I've really ever seen in my time working inside lacrosse. It's only been a few years, but they're just so talented top to bottom, arguably the most athletic Garden City team they've really had. And you look at their resume, people say they're, you know, ducking some certain teams, and but you look down, you know, their first game, they beat Syosset, you know, a team that won the Nassau A championship. You know, they beat Ward Melville 12-9, helped by Dan Marino's just an impeccable day in between the pipes. You know, they were Suffolk runner-up. Beat then number one Conestoga, beat Duxbury, Massachusetts state champion, Schroem, Wade, River, aforementioned, you know, Class C state champion, Manhasset. Really go down the list, and they beat some great teams. They were so great on the attack end with Devin Dwyer and Justin Gutterding, who is a junior headed to Duke, and then Liam Kennedy, who will go to Deerfield Academy, and then actually just verbal to Notre Dame. I mean, those guys were it was like clockwork. You knew what was coming. You know, Dwyer, Kennedy, or Dwyer, Gutterding, you know, you felt like you heard that 36 times whenever you were watching them play. And the midfield was so deep. Guys like Rob Savage, just a great shooter. Patrick Berkery, a really good athlete, both of which are headed to Penn. And then Mark Ellis and Ryan Norton, Cody George, a sophomore in Dartmouth. But I think the most impressive thing is that people said their defense would just be way down, losing, you know, three All-American caliber players. J.P. Burnside gets overlooked by Steven Jahelka and Brian Fisher. You know, who are rising sophomores at Harvard and Penn State. They lose those guys, and their defense is just as good. I mean, their last four games, they allowed a total of 11 goals combined, and that's unbelievable. And I got to give huge props to the coaching staff over there, Steve Fennell and company. But Dan Marino really stood in his head in a lot of games I saw him play. Just a really a treat to watch, you know, as the backstop for the Trojans. Love that team. Watched them 6 or 7 times. I remember getting up to Long Island, and right as I get into the press box, you know, they're lining up against Vaughn Tallman, Nassau B championship, and the game's called. And the next day they come back, and the first quarter is pretty interesting with Vaughn Tallman pretty much holding on to the ball. Then Garden City is the same thing, and then they go up and win 14-1. It was unbelievable because in New York, once you're up by 12 goals, I believe, it goes to running time. But that's just a big feat considering that's a team that beat Manhasset. They beat them 14-1, but what an impressive team. They'll lose a whole lot next year, but they have Justin Gutterding to rely on, Cody George. Ed Blatt's really came into his own on the defensive end. He's going to Georgetown. And Scott D'Antonio as well. And face-off play, I didn't mention that. James Sullivan was just unbelievable to face-off X. Had like 10 ground balls and 12 or 13 wins in the game against Yorktown. And he's a freshman. Won a whole lot to himself. It's almost like Stephen Kelly down here in Baltimore. But he's a rising star for sure. Just an impressive team.
Wither our friends down in the Mid-Atlantic. We definitely spent a lot of time looking at, again, a tremendous year for Long Island lacrosse, New York lacrosse in general. But I want to talk a little bit about Calvert Hall and Gonzaga and kind of what they did. Ty, just throwing it to you, you were definitely at the MIA Conference Championship, and I know you saw some of Gonzaga this year. What are your thoughts about those two teams in our top five at the end of the season?
Well, Calvert Hall, I'm almost glad they won because they made us look good, you know, putting them, giving them a photo shoot, having them number one, and you really couldn't argue that with how much talent they returned. But wow, they were impressive. And like you said, Jeff, earlier, it's, you know, that's a team, if I was West Islip, if I was Garden City, if I was St. Anthony's, Salisbury, whoever, I just would not want to play them. You know, I think it's the losses early in the season, it's almost like Duke, you know, it doesn't matter what they do, what losses they have, as long as you come around that late in the season and you're playing your best lacrosse in mid to late May, then you're golden. And that was the case with the Cardinals, led by Pat Kelly. He put the team in his back at times, had a huge game in the semifinals, had a huge game, as did, you know, several of his fellow seniors in that championship game to beat a very good Loyola team. And I think, you know, I may throw in something with the Dons that, you know, people sort of don't give credit to the Dons because they lost 17-3 in the championship, but they beat Gilman pretty handily. They were up 10-0 at half, and Loyola was, it was outstanding, and Calvert Hall just ran them off the field, it seemed like. They also had 7 goals in the fourth quarter, which helps. You know, I think coming in, we knew how much depth they had, and that depth showed in the championship. Being a team that good, that handily is just a really impressive accomplishment. And I'll miss watching those guys play. So cohesive, so well coached. They had a whole lot of fun out there, which was enjoyable for me to watch in the press box and sideline. They're going to have a ton of players that also return next year. Guys like Stephen Kelly, Garrett Apple, Jordan Germershausen, a star in the making, Timmy Kelly. Tyler Mays, the guy who's underrated, going to Towson, LSM, who was probably the best long pole in the state. And, yeah, that team was very special. Gonzaga also, that's a team I did get to watch this year. Unfortunately, if I could choose any team to watch this year, it'd be Gonzaga. I have really good things about them. I know Casey O'Neill, the head coach down in D.C., just a stone's throw away from the U.S. Capitol. He's done a really good job, and they don't really have an advantage, you know, like Georgetown Prep and Landon do, of getting guys from all over. This is an inner-city school. Landon and Georgetown Prep are obviously powers, and you know, they can pretty much get anybody they want, it seems like. It's a very attractive school. But Gonzaga, Casey's done such a good job of getting those players to come together and buy into the system. And, you know, they've been very impressive these past few years.
And they definitely beat all comers this year.
Exactly. They set their schedule up, and that's the biggest thing about them. I think if they hadn't played that schedule, then we wouldn't be sitting here with them in the number four spot. So kudos to the Purple Eagles.
Yeah, definitely. Great year for them. Just want to take a look. Quickly run down 5-15. 6-15, I'm sorry. Salisbury School and Deerfield Academy coming in 6-7. They're the co-champions of the New England West. The always tough New England West. Pennsylvania gets a little fun here in 8-9. Crazy year in Pennsylvania. One of those ones where, again, you had the top three or four teams, just really good, tremendous talent across the board. Just some results kind of made things kind of hairy when it came to putting together the top 25. But Haverford School in the number 8 spot, the Interact regular season champs and Interact Invitational finalist, followed by Conestoga, one of my favorite teams to follow this year. Had, another tremendous run, really did a good job stepping up their schedule, won a couple, lost a couple, but in the end walked away with a PIA championship, and just a ton of talent on that team. Chaminade, New York, you mentioned, comes in number 10. Bridgewater Raritan, the tournament champions, New Jersey champion, 21-0, just another year for them to make a nice run, usurping that top spot in the Jersey hierarchy there. Episcopal Academy, the winners of the Interact Invitational. I watched this game on TV, their face-off guy, Garina, I think he said at the Lafayette monster game, and it was a fun one to watch with the rain and the fans at Cabrini, and just a great atmosphere. I love Pennsylvania lacrosse. It's definitely come up and been one of my favorite regions to cover. And then we got Darien, Connecticut, winner of the Class M champions. That's where our guy, Case Mathias, one of our top recruits, is playing for this season. And they just had another nice run. I know they had a weird Connecticut. I'm never quite sure about Connecticut. I have to lean on my sources out there sometimes. But they have their regional champs and then their state champs. They lost in the regionals, won the major state champion this year.
It's very confusing. I mean, I wish it was simple. But, you know, the FCAC means a whole lot. And that's where you get teams like New Canaan and Greenwich and Ridgefield and Darien. But then I guess it's Class L. There's Class M. And then
Class C, I want to say.
Class C or Class S? S, I think it is. Yeah, but, yeah, very confusing.
And then we got Ithaca at number 14. Great year for them, 18-2. And Loyola Bakefield, number 15. And then just to throw them in there as well, Irondequoit, number 16, who were the finalists in the Class B. Ithaca was the finalist in the Class A. Really kind of crazy there. A lot of different storylines. I don't know if any of you guys want to comment on any of these groups here, Ty. That you might be some thoughts there.
Yeah, I'll talk about St. Anthony's. And I think a goal of mine in this podcast sort of touch on topics that people were talking about nonstop in our comments. And I think a huge one there was St. Anthony's. Thinking that that ranking at number 5 is a bit too much. And I understand that argument 100%. And that's something that... you know, Jeff, I know you and I probably lost a little bit of sleep there thinking about that argument with, Haverford beat Episcopal twice this year. Chaminade beat St. Anthony's twice, but it's about winning when it counts, and that's the biggest thing. You know, like we said with Duke, you know, if you have those losses, it doesn't matter. You know, as long as you avenge them or you come out victorious at the end of the year, that's all it is. And St. Anthony's, they lost this game to Chaminade and had the motivation. I was able to watch that game and cover that actually, you know, from my couch, and I watched on FC Varsity, and they were great. Guys like Eric Caliendo came in for Kieran Burke, a North Carolina-bound goalie. Caliendo's headed to Haverford. And Dill Malloy and a junior attackman going to Brown. Those guys just had monstrous games. In general, St. Anthony's a team that, you know, while he lost to Darien, and then they also lost to those to Chaminade twice. They're a very impressive team. They had a great schedule, as they always do. You know, it's a weird league in that it's just extremely top-heavy. Every now and then you'll get a fight from Kellenberg Memorial or Holy Trinity, but that's probably, you know, a once-in-five-year occasion. So you have to really load your schedule with top teams around you. Darien, Connecticut is one of them. That was a team that was very impressive. I think they just didn't keep it together the entire year, or else they would have been in, you know, I'd say 3 or 4 range. But you know, don't hate in the Friars, man. They were very tough at the end of the year.
Casey, we mentioned a couple of MIAA teams here. You got to see some Mid-Atlantic action this year. I know you've historically been someone who's been more upstate New York and that area. What was some of your impressions from watching Mid-Atlantic lacrosse this year?
Well, one thing that I took away in going to games during the season and then the MIAA championships was the pride that the schools and their fans take in the lacrosse that's played down here. That's one thing that really stood out to me. I felt like at the championships, that was one of the more impressive crowds I'd seen, where everybody was into it. There was a real feel to me of like a scholastic sort of, almost like something you see in movies growing up as a kid, where everybody comes out to the big game or whatever. That's exactly how it felt down here for me. I think that when you look at some of the teams like Calvert Hall and Loyola Bakefield, and I got to watch Gilman and Boys Latin, I just felt like I'm looking at some of the most elite players being drawn together on the same team, which makes for impressive lacrosse no matter how you spin it. You know, well-coached, highly skilled, very, very polished, all of the players, it seems. And that's one thing that I really took away from it all, was just that these teams are competing at a very, very, very high level. All of the athleticism is very high. You know, there's, when you look at a typical high school team, there's always a few kids who stand out as not being all that athletic. Well, I found that to not be the case with the MIAA schools. It felt like the ceiling is high and the other guy, the floor isn't as low. There's a lot of kids who could make their way to Blake College lacrosse. I will say that when I look at some teams from maybe upstate New York or other areas, I think those teams could be competitive with a lot of teams from around the country. But when I look at MIAA teams, it seems like the kids, as you get further down the bench, are still very, very good players. And that's why I think that these teams sort of stand out as being like a garden for recruits in a way. And that's why I was able to pull that away. Just the support they get as programs, and then the feel of it all. It almost feels like college lacrosse. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think growing up in Baltimore, I think Casey hit the nail on the head. With how much pride these schools have in the lacrosse programs, and I can say that coming from an MIAA school myself, it almost is like a college. I love New York, and that's why I'm up there so much. I love the environment up there. One town, one team is the motto from Suffolk County schools, and same can be said about so many schools in New York. But in Baltimore, I think talk about the fan support and the alumni support is the biggest thing. And that stretches to schools like Georgetown, perhaps Atlanta, from the IAC, is that you'll have alumni from all over come back for the playoffs and don their school colors and go to the game. And then you talk about on-field, and we could probably do a whole magazine article or podcast in and on itself, the comparing and contrasting the Maryland and New York style of play. Down here it's so much more finesse. I feel like these guys, they've been playing together forever, going back to the rec leagues. They're just so smart. They know where their fellow attackman is cutting to. It's almost just seamless, very pretty to watch. And the same can almost be said about certain schools in New York, but it is a little bit different. You see some different sort of athletes. I've watched some teams in Long Island that they just, it's almost like California, where they have a football player and put a lacrosse stick in their hands. Like I think Sayville and Wontaw, and schools like that come to mind from Long Island. But that's the case. But that's not to sort of, disrespect their IQ or their stick skills or anything, but that's the impression I get. Down here, it's finesse, and it's IQ, it seems like. But it's always fun going up to New York after seeing Baltimore. And Casey, I know we could probably talk about that all day, but those are just my initial impressions to add on to what Casey said from an outsider point of view, outsider being, New York native. But those are my thoughts.
I'm not even from Philly, but I'm going to throw my hat in saying what I like about their version of lacrosse the best is that it's the best of both worlds. You get the sort of the nice MIA style model with what the Interact is doing and developing that league into a premier league in high school country, and then you still have some of these nice, as Ty mentioned, that kind of like one team, one town, or one region, one town models with Conestoga and producing what they're doing as a public school. So my hat's off to the Philly people as well. I think we have three jewels in the crown of hotbed recruiting, and then just nationally, you throw a national model. It's huge after that.
And Philly, it seems like every year I feel like I discover new teams there. There are so many, and I also got to give the hats off to Chris Goldberg, Philly lacrosse. I don't know how he keeps track of all of it and manages to run his Baltimore Long Island sites as well, but yeah, props to Chris, and keep it up.
Want to just go over 16-25. We mentioned around the court before. Duxbury, Mass. Comes in at 17, went 23-2, won the Massachusetts Division I champion. That's kind of foregone conclusion that they're going to win that guy this year. But they definitely had a nice season. Landon kind of rebounded in the second half of their season to win the IAC champion down in D.C., beat an upstart Bulls team that's going to be one to watch in the next couple of years. I think there's going to be three big powers in that league soon. And Gilman at 19, 12-4, MIA semi-finalist. And then one of the teams that I was kind of proud to put in the top 25 this year, La Costa Canyon at 20, finished the season 22-1, had a tremendous run through both California and their East Coast trip. Took St. Anthony's to a goal within the last seconds of that game. If they walk away with that, they're a top 10 team this year, I think. but again, tremendous talents across the board, beat rival Torrey Pines a bunch of times to, in order to solidify what they were doing. And they send a kid, Brandon Gaughan, to the Under Armour All-American game. He's also Michigan's first Under Armour All-American. Fantastic year for a California program, and very deserving of where they landed in this rankings. 21 is Fairport, Class B semifinalist up there, 21. Great year for them. They just ran into a tough Ithaca squad. And then Ward Melville, again, another power off of Suffolk. A good season for them. There's just so many teams off there that you're going to have trouble always coming out with a championship run. Niskayuna, another good year for them. I really like what they've done with that program. Finished 22-2 semifinalists. We mentioned Shoreham, Wading River before Class C champions this year. And then number 25, Arapahoe out of California, 19-0, makes the full run. I'm sorry, I said California, Colorado. Arapahoe out of Colorado. 19-0, make the run to the Colorado High School State Champions. Always a tremendous effort to go undefeated in Colorado, one of the biggest hotbeds out of the East Coast when it comes to lacrosse. So great year as always. Guys, any final thoughts, any favorite memories or moments? Casey, I'll go with you. This is your first year covering that full-time for us. What were some of your favorite moments out of this season?
Well, definitely, obviously, just being at the New York State Championships is a real treat. It's a bear to cover it all, and it's physically and mentally draining a little bit to be there for all three championships like that, and be around so many highs and lows all at once, because you follow teams and you get to know families and you see them finish up their seasons, and it's great to see one team excited, and it's kind of tough to watch another team, in their season in defeat. But that's the way sports happen, and that's the way the ball bounces, and I was lucky to be able to be there for that. I have to say that watching Jamesville DeWitt have its the playoff run come to an end was striking because of that, what that program has been able to do, and to see Ron DeCoy finally get over the hump. You had to be proud for Craig Whipple, because he's worked hard to make those kids believe that they can do it, and Jamesville DeWitt has been arguably one of the best teams in the country. One of the scariest teams in the country the last few years, and the fact they were able to get as far as they did this year, having lost everything that they lost last year, was impressive. But seeing Aron DeCoy get over that hump was something. But then to see Garden City get over that hump was probably something even more memorable, because that had been a long time coming for those guys. But I'd kind of be foolish if I didn't mention something that I wasn't actually there for but followed so closely, and that was my man Zed Williams breaking the New York State record for scoring. He hit 554 points, and I don't know if anybody realizes just what that stands for. He surpassed Casey Powell's record that was set, in 1994, and he has a year to go to put points on top of that. That tells me that this record could very well last for the better part of a century. Where this kid ends up is yet to be determined, but knowing the coaches that I know who are after him, I think that we're looking at a player who could very well crash the scene and become one of the most successful and well-known Native American lacrosse players of all time. The kid is a hardworking, quiet, humble kid. He's playing Six Nations Junior B this year, helping those guys on their way to possibly competing for the Founders Cup. I wasn't there in person, but his record-breaking goal came against Penn Yan in the state quarterfinals and tied the game at 13. They ended up losing 14-13, and the goaltender Mace that I referenced before stuffed Zed on a last-second shot as he came from X, beat his man, and sent a low worm burner that Mace ate up, and that's how Silver Creek's season came to an end. But I think that's one of the most interesting stories that's out there, because this kid comes from an area that is growing for lacrosse. I almost think of Buffalo as comparable to a Philly, but maybe just still a little bit out of the scene. They have an awfully nice position to get Canadian people to come through there, and the influence is strong. You look at like Randy Mirren's coaching at Canisius. But there's reservations out there where natives are playing, Tuscarora, Seneca, Zeta Seneca. And, the talk has always been about Onondaga and Mohawk and those reservations. And as a guy who really has taking a lot of pride in covering that area of whether it's college or high school or the international scene, I'm pretty proud for Zed. He comes from a small town, tight-knit family, and I'm proud for his coach, Bill Brennan, just because what they've put together. has been very impressive. And I tell you, any team that would have run into them would have had a hard time with them, even Sherwin-Williams River, because I don't think that it's easy to figure out how to defend a team that can have players who put up 10 to 16 points in a game. So props to Zed Williams for, at this point, still unofficial. It's all my stats that I've been collecting, and I've pulled them from newspapers and things like that. It's kind of tough sometimes to get all the stats from the New York State Writers Association. Sometimes there's a delay there, but he does have 554 points, putting him one ahead of Casey Powell, and he has a year to go. This is a kid who put up 170 points the year before last, put up 99 points as an eighth grader on varsity, followed up as a ninth grader with over 160 points. I don't have his numbers right in front of me, but the numbers are incredible. The kid is incredible, and I can't wait to see what he does at the next level.
Yeah, I think to add on to that, you mentioned Silver Creek. You know, they're playing with less than 15 players, and that's the most impressive feat. I'd love to see any team around, you know, play 15 players and see how they fare. But you know, looking at these rankings, I think you'll notice a lot of teams that if you've been following high school lacrosse for a while, they're familiar faces, familiar names, household names in the high school lacrosse world. But I want to point out, you know, a few teams there, and I've already mentioned a few schools that have really come on strong these past, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And are just as familiar as, you know, the Garden Cities, the West Islips, the Cavern Halls, the Gilmans, whoever, the Landons. You know, Gonzaga, I mentioned, I talked about them a while. Conestoga really came on strong, I'd say, 2009. They'd been there for a while, but 2009, that was a really impressive team. You know, one of those guys who led the way there was Mike Bronzino, who's up at Cornell right now. But Brian Sampson has done a really good job with this system. It's a public school, obviously. Going down the list, Bridgewater Raritan, you know, crushing Del Barton in the championship, beating Summit the year before to shock the world, it seemed like. You know, kudos to that staff. And Aranacoy has always been there, but I love what they've been doing. Jamesville DeWitt, I think, is really a national power right now. And then going down and mentioning a team like La Costa Canyon, a team I really enjoyed watching. You know, I got some film of them for their game against St. Anthony's and was really impressed. Brennan Gaughan, you mentioned, and also Aaron Loy, a guy who scored a plethora of game winners. But I really enjoy watching teams like that. I think just a note to any non-hotbed team out there, you know, make trips like La Costa Canyon made. To Long Island and play the best. I think you hear it almost way too much. If you want to be the best, play the best. And that's what LCC did this year. And, you know, I hope they keep that up. I hope other non-hotbed teams keep it up. But, you know, all in all, just a really exciting year. So it's fun to watch teams like Garden City exceed expectations, teams like Cavern Hall meet expectations, and, you know, come together in the championship game. You know, there are a lot of teams that will lose a whole lot, but I'm looking forward to seeing how they reload. I just wish it wasn't several months away until we start the next high school season as we get right into recruiting. But, yeah, just a really enjoyable season, and, you know, I'm going to miss it.
Caveat to what Ty said about programs, non-hotbed programs coming to play big teams out the east. I also like to see when big teams from the east go out west or south or whatnot and play those teams in their home turf as well. Shout out to my guy Bob Shriver at Boys Land, who kind of pioneered that with playing those teams down in south in Florida St. Andrews and like Highland Prep, and did a good job with that kind of stuff. So any final thoughts we want to get in on this?
Yeah, really quick. You know, I feel like we don't really talk enough about Deerfield and Salisbury. They're teams that we haven't been able to watch. I know Salisbury had a trip down here a year or two ago to play Boys Latin at the beginning of their season. But, you know, those schools are very fun to follow. I wish I could have a permanent residence in Boston during the spring just to watch those New England prep schools and some of the teams in New England. But and that's something that I'm going to sort of touch on in our next issue of Inside Lacrosse is, you know, the chemistry between some post-grads and the established cohesive underclassmen of the post-grad schools. That's just a really hot topic right now. I think The post-grad debate is a huge one. Should we rank these teams? I think yes, because they're playing. You know, I'm not even getting into that because we're playing with some old guys down in Baltimore and D.C. or what have you. But Deerfield and Salisbury, Bobby Wynn at Salisbury and Chip Davis at Deerfield do a really good job of finding the right balance between PGs and juniors and seniors to get those teams to to be the best teams in the country. I wish they played better schedules, but there are rules that prohibit that. But you look at that league, and there's no slouch across the board. You're playing a very good team every single Wednesday and Saturday, and you really see more one goal games in that league than you will anywhere else. I had to fit in those teams from Connecticut and Massachusetts, respectively.
And I'd like to, just to add to that, I just returned from 3D Lacrosse's Denver Shootout in Colorado, and while I went out there with the plan, and I did watch plenty of players and teams from different parts of the country, including California and Colorado, including Arapaho. There's no denying that I left most impressed with the 3D Select New England team that is coached by Matt Rowley, and went down there and won the Rising Stars division. And that made me want to next year make sure that I go out of my way to go up into New England, and I can stay at my homeboy Matt Rowley's place and put my feet on his couch and check some of that out, because to be honest, I was blown away by some of the young kids that are going to be entering the prep school ranks there. And just wildly talented kids that have been around good lacrosse, and I'm pretty excited about what next year can bring, because this will be my second year full-time down here, so we'll see what we can do to expand out.
Definitely. Guys, thank you very much for your work this season. As always, tremendous stuff. Just want to say quickly my favorite moment from this season. It's an individual moment. I'd go back to Calvert Hall installed some lights in their stadium this year, which allowed them to host some Friday night light style games. And the one I got to cover back in the spring was a visit from Conestoga, who was ranked, I guess, top three at the time. Calvert Hall was the reigning number one team at that moment, so we got to see number one versus number three in front of a packed house. Must have been at least 3,000 or 4,000 plus fans in that stadium. Lights down. Calvert Hall goes up, then Conestoga slowly makes a comeback and walks away with an 11-10 upset victory. Part of a big day of upsets across the high school region. It was fun to follow that on Twitter. And I remember as soon as that game was over, I'm looking up and Landon has an upset victory over Haverford. Haverford's first loss in, I want to say, about two seasons.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, so that was just one of those great high school lacrosse days where you know what's going on and people are talking, and I love when those days happen like that. So looking forward to more of those in the future. Everybody, we'll be out at the recruiting scene this summer, all over the place. Ty, Casey, and more of us will be at events like Nike Blue Chip, Under Armour, the big team camps, nationally will be at places, so make sure to follow us on InsideLacrosse.com, and we'll be tweeting occasionally from @ILPreps.com, which was a great resource, I thought, for us this year, and kind of getting the news and notes of the day out for us. So make sure you follow us both at the website and on Twitter at ILPreps.com. Guys, thank you very much for your time, and take care. Looking forward to the summer and heading into 2013.